Om Agyanati Mirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Nama Shreshtam Manamapi Shachiputram Atrasurupam Rupam Tasya Agrajam Urupurim Maturim Goshtavatim Radha Kundam Giribaramaho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Sri Gurum Tandatosmi Shantakaram Bhujagashayanam Padmanabham Suresham Vishvadharam Gagana Sadrisham Meghavaranam Shubhangam Lakshmikantam Kamalanayanam Yogipi Dhyana Gamyam Vande Vishnum Bhavabhayaharam Sarvalokaikanatham Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Continuing discussion of Sri Vishnu Sahasranam, which is suitable in all times, places, and circumstances within the material world and the spiritual world to discuss Sri Vishnu Sahasranam. Especially as Vishnu is expected tomorrow. He's coming. His appearance is, we're preparing for Janmashtami. So with remembrance of and praying at the lotus feet of and glorification of Bhishma Dev, who recited this in the presence of his worshipable Lord, the original Vishnu, Bhagavan Krishna, in reply to a query of Yudhishthira, what is the best thing for everyone in all times, places, and circumstances to do? So the answer is to chant the holy names, and this is an answer. For the pleasure of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who asked or told Sri Vash Thakur to recite the Vishnu Sahasranama with veneration of all our acharyas. In our Sampradaya, Baladev Vidyabhushan gave a commentary on this. In Madhvacharya also did. In the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, Parashara Bhakta, and there's one Radha Krishna Shastra, I'm not sure which Sampradaya is. In Shankaracharya also gave a commentary. And innumerable devotees and non-devotees have recited this since time immemorial. It's still commonly recited by Vaishnavas and Smartas. In South India, it's common for retired men. You'll find both the Vaishnavas and the Smartas sitting in the temple together chanting Vishnu Sahasranama. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he gave great importance to this. So, with the knowledge and blessings received from Srila Prabhupada to discuss these topics, we'll continue with name 104. Sarva Yoga Vinisrita. So the first two words, or if we break this name into its components, the first two words are well-known words. Sarva Yoga. So all yogas. Vinisrita. Nisrita means gone away or disappeared. And it also means to come forth, to come into being. So these are two opposite ideas. And Vinisrita. Can be an intensifier or a negator, negativier, something that negates. So this opens up the name to many possible meanings. Apart from that, don't know about all of you, but to me it just sounds very nice. Sarva Yoga Vinisrita. I think it sounds nice. To me it sounds, it should sound nice. It's the name of Vishnu. And if we remember that every word, Madhvacharya, he said that every word is, can be understood as Vishnu. So if he, I mean, he can interpret everything by his erudition to be Vishnu. So, in that way, we can never talk prajalpa. And we can remember every word as being Vishnu, Krishna. But especially this Vishnu Sahasranam, it's especially concerned with the qualities and opulences of the Supreme Lord. So a few explanations are given here. And some other ideas may be there also. Madhvacharya proposed to give 100 meanings of each name, but mostly the commentators just give one or two meanings. They often give different meanings also. Anyway, yoga has two main meanings. One is union or contact, and another meaning is a means by which one can attain an end, or particularly a means by which one can come to the platform of yoga. So we well known are karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga, bhakti yoga, and then there are many others within that also. Many other forms of yoga. So these are all means to an end. The end of uniting with the Supreme Absolute Truth. Whether that is understood to be Krishna, that's the actual full meaning, Krishna, or the yogis or the impersonalists, they tend to think of merging with with the impersonal absolute. So the karma that is done for the sake of uniting or coming to the platform of yoga, that is eventually to be given up. And then one, when one achieves yoga, then in that conception, in the non-devotional conception of karma yoga and jnana yoga, these are means to be given up when one attains the goal. But in bhakti, the means and the goal are the same. Bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya. Bhakti gives rise to bhakti. So, one meaning of this is that he is the object, or he is to be attained by all forms of yoga. All the forms of yoga are ultimately meant for attaining him, whether the performers of those yoga systems, jnana yoga, karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga, whether or not they are aware of that, he is the ultimate object of their karma, jnana, and there's also yoga. Sometimes yoga is... Sometimes the term yoga is used to mean the Ashtanga yoga system, and then we get yoga mishra bhakti, which means bhakti mixed with the endeavor to or the Ashtanga yoga system. So all these yoga paths are, he is the ultimate object of them all. So another meaning is that he is free from all kinds of yoga, means all kind of contact. He has no material contact. So that's easy to understand for those who've studied Bhagavat Tattva Vijnana. He's not in contact. But on the other hand, he is in contact with everything. Nothing is out of his contact. Nothing can exist without him. It's only because of him that anything exists, or everything everything keeps on going the way it does. In modern science, we study the laws of physics, how everything, you see, when you build this building, you have to think how to build it in such a way that this will be supported. There are different laws, and if you made this out of, if you tried to make this pillar out of spongy foam, you wouldn't do the job. So you have to select the right material. But what is it that actually holds everything in place? What's that? The God principle they claim to discover? The God particle. Yeah, they just got a little bit wrong. It should be the God principle. God. Forget the particle, it's God. He holds everything in place. So, but at the same time, he's not in contact with anything. He enters into everything, but at the same time, he's aloof from everything. He's always in his, he is as he is in his transcendental position. He is connected with and the vital principle of everything, but at the same time, he is aloof from everything. All yogas are meant for attaining him, but at the same time, only bhakti actually attains him. So all concepts or practices of yoga except bhakti yoga, they miss him. You don't actually contact. Unless there's bhakti, then all forms of yoga, they miss him. They don't contact. The contact's not made. Contact is always there. We cannot but be in contact with something and or with all of totality. We cannot avoid that. The impersonalists, they desire to give up all connections. But then you cease to exist, which is also not possible. So all the material, not only the process of karma, jnana, and yoga, and dhyana, without a conception of Krishna, without bhakti, not only did they miss him, but all kinds of material connections, they also miss him. Krishna is supreme bliss. He is bliss. That's one of his names. Ananda. There are many names is coming up. Amrita. He is nectar. So everyone's looking for Krishna in all their connections, either man to woman, father to child, man to dog. Connections are made. Everyone is looking for the perfect connection that will satisfy them fully. But without Krishna, it's all a miss. We don't make the connection that we need to make. So all kinds of connections without the Krishna connection, it's miscommunication. Doesn't really happen. What we're expecting or hoping for, that full satisfaction, prashanta nishesha manoratantaram, the fully satisfied, mind has become doesn't happen without Krishna. Only if we connect with Krishna. Bhavantam evanu charam nirantara prashanta nishesha manoratantara kadahamai kandika nitya kinkara praharsha yashami sanata jivitam. This is the prayer of complete satisfaction on being connected with Krishna. He prayed this. Yamuna Acharya prays like this. When will that day come? Obviously, by the very expression of this prayer, he's already attained that position, but he says, when will that day come? When I will be fixed as your servant, in my eternal position as your servant, the mind will be fully satisfied instead of somersaulting all over the place all the time. All that will end. All the mental, the material, mental attempts at making connections, that will all cease. Then, what's the next line? Bhavanti me margin. Kadaham aikantika nitya. Again, he says, well, when will I be fixed as your exclusive personal servant and be fully happy to living in the understanding that I have got my master? So this is the contact with Krishna that Krishna is willing to make with everyone. That's another meaning. Sarva. With Krishna is connected with everyone. Some people recognize it and some don't. And those who don't, they are destroyed by doing so. Keho mane, keho na mane, sab taradas, jena mane, tar hoi sarvanash. Some people recognize it and some don't. But everyone is his servant. Those who don't recognize this, they are destroyed by that, by not recognizing that. So, name 105. Vasu. Vasu, this name is the first or the primary meaning, is derived from the understand, just like the word vasa, which means residence or dwelling. So he is a resident or a dweller. So everyone lives somewhere. Everyone somewhere. So everyone's, many of these names of Vishnu, they can apply to the Jiva or they can apply to Brahma or Shiva. Then some of them, they're not exclusive to him. But when names like this, resident, when understood in relation to him, we have to understand contextually how he is a resident. We are a resident. You can give your address. Where do you live? Just like quite often I can imagine people ask Prahladananda Swami, where do you live? And the reply is, on airplanes. Yeah, I know because I have the same thing. Where do you live? No fixed residence. Vagabond. Yeah. Tridandi Parivrajak in your case. So, everyone has a residence. Even, well, our residence should be at the lotus feet of Krishna. So where does Krishna live? Well, that comes in the Nectar of Devotion also, isn't it? Radharani asks Krishna, where is your vasa? And he gives various clever replies to avoid the question and make her laugh and frustrated. So how is he different? How is he different from everyone else? Even a worm has a hole to crawl into or some stool to crawl into. The pig has his pen. Everyone's living somewhere. At least the itinerants, they can also say, we live on this planet. Where does Krishna live? Well, he himself replies, Naham tishthami vaikunthe. Yoginam hridayeshu vai yatra gayanti madbhakta tatra tishthami narada. Where do you live? What's Vishnu's address? Vaikuntha, right? Right? Everyone. But he says, I don't live there. Oh, he must be in the hearts of the yogis. No, don't live there. Where does he live? Okay, everyone. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. Okay, that's where he lives. Wherever devotees are chanting his glories, he dwells in the hearts of his devotees. As he says himself, sadhavo, sadhavo hridayang mahyam, sadhunang hridayang tvaham, madanyatena jananti nahang te bhyo managapi. He says, literally he says, I am the heart of my devotees. And Srila Prabhupada translated that as, I am always in the heart of my devotees, and they are always in my heart, because I know nothing but them, and they know nothing but me. So, where such devotees who know nothing but Krishna, where they are chanting his holy names, which is what they do, Krishna resides there. Of course, he resides in everyone's heart. Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishtaha. Krishna resides in everyone's heart. But he does so formally in the hearts of those who are not devotees, but in the hearts of his pure devotees, he is manifest. He's seen always, premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena santas sadaiva hridayeshu vilokyanti. He's fully manifest to the devotees. They don't forget Krishna at any moment. He doesn't forget anyone at any moment, and a devotee is one who doesn't forget him at any moment. So he dwells everywhere, in everything, andantarastha paramanu chayantarastham. He dwells within the atoms and between the atoms. Now, here's a question. He dwells within the atom. What about between the atom? He dwells in the hearts of his devotees. Is he with his devotee, or that's he dwells in the heart of everyone and within every atom. Yeah, so what about in between the atoms? What about that? Brahma Jyoti, he's everywhere, yeah. Either in his localized form or as the impersonal on Brahman, he's known. So he dwells everywhere, which is this comes as the name Vasudeva, and the name Vishnu is Vishnu Sahasranam. So Vishnu means one who is all-pervading, is everywhere. But particularly in the hearts of his devotees. In English we have, there's one word house and another word home. Do you have in your language or just one word? You have separate words, two words. Yeah. So you may live in a house, but it may not be home. But he's at home in the hearts of his devotees. Another particular meaning, he dwells, where does he dwell? In the milk ocean. He's lying in the milk ocean. On the Anantashesha, with his lotus feet being massaged by Lakshmi and all the Narada, the Kumaras and all the Siddhas and Gandharvas offering him prayers. So that's his particular residence within the material world. Another meaning is of Vasu is wealth. So he is wealth. What is wealth? Wealth is that which is considered to be valuable. Gold is considered valuable, but not necessarily by everyone. We've heard that when the Spanish, or those Spanish people who went to South America, they saw so much gold, and they were surprised. And so when the residents found they're interested in gold, they just go, how much do you want? You take it. Because they didn't think it was anything very special. We think that gold is wealth because we ascribe value to it. Although there's not actually that much you can do with it. You can make ornaments out of it. That's all right. You can make ornaments out of wood and plastic also. So because we ascribe value to it, it's considered wealth. In the Vedic conception, gavaya dhanavan, dhanyavan, dhanavan. One was cows and grains, they are wealthy because that's something practical, usable. So what is the actual wealth? Another example is the after the sacrifice performed by, who is that? One king? Later Dhananjay went to get all, who is that? Maharaj Mandhatar. He gave all the wealth, all the gold to the Brahmins. They thought, what are we going to do with it? It's too much to carry. They just all left it all there. And then later Arjuna went and picked it all up. And then Yudhishthira Maharaj was saying, please sit so you don't show your back to the deities. So the Brahmin, and regularly we find in Shastra it's described that the kings, such as Prithu, they give the whole world away to the Brahmanas. And they said, well, okay, thanks a lot. Well, you can take it back. We don't really need all this. You look after it. So what is wealth? The ultimate wealth is that which is for our benefit. Therefore, cows and grains are considered wealth. Because you can do something with them. Now, in the modern age, people are anxious. Many people are thinking of getting gold because paper money, it's not reliable, whereas gold has its fixed value. But you know what? When there's no food, gold won't help you at all. So, good advice. If you're afraid of impending world disaster, it's always a world disaster, but sometimes are worse than others. Grow your own food. If there's a world economic collapse, it doesn't make any difference to someone who grows their own food. You don't even need money if you grow your own food and produce everything that you have. So get away from the city, as far away as possible, so that people can't come and attack you, and grow your own food, and chant Hare Krishna, of course, otherwise it's all useless. But what is valuable? Well, our basic needs are food, clothing, shelter. So that's in the material sense. And then ultimately, what do we need? We need Krishna. Everything is useless. Everything is empty without Krishna. So the real wealth that we are searching for is Krishna. So he is the wealth. The Brahmanas, they didn't want the gold. What is the value of gold? We've got something much more valuable. The story of Sanatana Goswami and the touchstone. What is the most valuable thing in the world? I want the most valuable thing in the world, the devotee or that person who is supplicating Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva said, okay, go see Sanatana Goswami in Vrindavan. So he went to see Sanatana Goswami. Do you have the most valuable thing in the world? Yes. So can you give it to me? Yes. Where is it? It's in that pile of garbage over there. You can take it out, the touchstone. Anything you touch to it turns into gold. I guess you have to say a mantra also. That's like the key to it. Otherwise it becomes dangerous, like that Midas. As soon as you touch it, then you become a gold statue. So he took it and thought, okay. But why is Sanatana Goswami throwing it in the garbage And he's just sitting there. So then Sanatan gave him the real valuable thing. But you have to put the material idea of wealth in the garbage. Then you can get the real wealth, which is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, wealth, Vasu means wealth. See, one name has so many important meanings. Another meaning, Vasu, because he is one of the eight Vasus. In the Gita, Krishna says, Vasu naam pavakas chasmi, among the Vasus, the eight Vasus, they are eight prominent personalities in the universal setup. So Pavaka is one of them. Then who as Vasu also means air. So who as air moves and is in the antariksha. That means antariksha means the space. The region of space beyond the earth. So the air that, according to the modern scientists, there's no air there, but clearly the Vedic definition of air is different to that of modern scientists. So he is the air who moves about in the antariksha, in this space. There's no further discussion of that given here. So, dictionary definitions. Wealth, goods, riches, property, that's already discussed. That which is excellent and beneficial. This is Vasu. So, that can be all understood as wealth. That which is first class and very beneficial. What is beneficial for us? What is our real self-interest? That is Krishna. To remember Krishna, to serve Krishna. When we come in contact with Krishna, then everything becomes good. There's another name coming up, Rudra, which means he who makes you cry. Anyway, we'll discuss that a little later. So, our ultimate benefit is in contact, coming in contact with Krishna. Even though it may seem that we lose, it may be detrimental in some ways. People will say that why are you taking up this Krishna consciousness? Then you can't live a normal life. You can't go to the movie. Well, nowadays maybe you can, but you're not supposed to go to the movies. You're not supposed to watch TV. Can't join everyone else eating nice things, what they think nice. You can't see it's a social habit to sit with your friends in the bar. You can't enjoy that. So how is it beneficial? And it's actually anti-national to do so. You don't identify yourself as a member of the country. Then how are you going to fight the war when it's time for the next war to come around? So it may seem not beneficial. You may give up your studies in the school. Therefore, it should be understood that our real self-interest is Vishnu. Nati vidu swartha gatin hi Vishnu. People who do not know their real self-interest, they do not know that that is Vishnu. They have to suffer in this material world. So it may seem that immediately we lose so many things when we take to Krishna consciousness. But actually it's all for the gain. We lose, everything that we lose is worth losing. The sense of being a member of a country, socializing with people who are interested in chit-chatting about that which is of no actual value. Wasting even 1 second without the attempt to serve Krishna, these are all detrimental. So this should be very clearly understood that our real benefit is in Krishna consciousness, not in anything else. Oh yeah, with wealth comes another meaning, property. Property means something that we own. So how can Vishnu be property? Because he owns everything. That's one of the first things we understand, that we and everything that we think is mine, it all belongs to him. We do not own anything. But in the advanced stage of Krishna consciousness, there's the conception of mamata in relationship with Krishna, mineness. He is mine. Tumito amar, no, what is that? Amito toma tumito amar, ki kaj opare dhane. I am yours, you are mine. What is there? What is the need for any other kind of apparent or so-called property or wealth? So mamata, this is actually a name for Radha. It's a common name in India for women. It means the sense of mindness, but not in the demoniac sense, Ishvaro ham aham bhogi, but in the affectionate sense, like a mother. This is my child. I have to look after this child. It's not even a philosophical proposition. A mother doesn't, when the child pops out of her womb, she doesn't have to go through a logical process. This is my baby, therefore it is my duty to look after this baby. But it's a natural sense of affection, which, not only humans, even cows very prominently, and dogs, and most species, some snakes, and fish, they eat their own offspring. Maybe you've seen these guppies, these fish, they have about 1,000 and they do a little, they trim off the population by eating their own offspring. But it's natural for a mother to have, to feel, this is my baby. So that feeling of affection for Krishna, beyond philosophizing, when one has a very strong sense that is just like, it's stronger even than this, than I need to eat. That's a very strong sense, right? When we're hungry, unless we're spiritually advanced, that consciousness takes over our whole consciousness. That I need to eat, I'm hungry. Or I'm cold. We become affected by that. But if we're absorbed in something, like even materialistic people, there's that example is given in Shastra of the a man is working on the side of the road. That's quite common in India even now, and probably here also, until you join the European Union. People make something like some basketry on the side of the road, and they're selling it also. So it's not that they get customers all the time. In between times, they make something. So the example is given of the smith. That means he's making some, whatever, jewelry or something, on the side of the road. And the king goes past, which means that so the king goes past. There's all trumpets and guards and horses, and it's a big thing. But the person, he's so absorbed in making what he's making, he just doesn't even notice. So if one is so much absorbed in love of Krishna that he don't even notice hunger, thirst. So that's, we'll find a mother if she's, her child is in danger or is coming home late for school, it's getting later and later and wondering what's going on, anxiety. then she'll forget her own hunger or whatever else was on her mind. So that natural feeling, Krishna is mine, that is a stage to be aspired for. So that's Vasu. The next is name 106. Vasu Mana. One who has a wealthy mind, or in English, you can say a synonym of wealthy is rich, one who has a rich mind. Then rich also means not just in terms of property and money, but it means rich in content, noble, one who has noble thought. We can say this means one who has noble thoughts. His thought processes are not contaminated by attachment, mundane attachment, by which one desires to use something for one's own pleasure to the exclusion of others. Of course, everything in existence is meant for Krishna's pleasure. But he desires to share that with others. He's not selfish, small-minded. He's very broad-minded. He has no hatred of others. He's free from the modes of nature. He's not envious of anyone. And he simply desires the benefit of others. So, in this way, he has a noble mind. And we see that Krishna, he comes to this world, he speaks Bhagavad Gita for the welfare of everyone. Such thoughts come from Krishna's mind, Bhagavad Gita. Speaking that for the welfare of others. And his mind is also rich in the sense that, well, he knows everything. He knows everything and he can discourse on all topics, but what topics does he discuss? He discusses Bhagavad Gita, then there's also Uddhava Gita. So this is for the devotees also to, that they should always try to enrich their minds and not allow their thought processes to be dragged down to a lower level. We have such rich content. Srila Prabhupada's books, we're giving these books out on the streets, and the content in these books is of such a quality far beyond anything which people have ever seen in their lives, unless they got one of Prabhupada's books before. Even if we compare to the religious literature of this world, they don't have any information of God. Who is he? He is the Alpha and the Omega. He created this world in 6 days. And that's about all. And then he chucks you into hell forever. That's all. That's all the information they have about him. But there's immense information about the personality of Godhead in the Vedic literature, so devotees can enrich themselves by absorbing this knowledge which he has kindly given. Now, Vasumana also says, also means, he whose mind is always absorbed in wealth. So, there are some people like that. They're always thinking of money. And they're so busy making money. Oh, you were telling me. They spend all their life making money, and they make lots of money, but they never have time to do anything with the money except invest it and make more. They're just absorbed in money, 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 money. So Krishna is also absorbed in wealth. He's always thinking about you-know-who. His wealth. He thinks of his devotees, especially Sri Radha. That he's always thinking of her. So his mind is always absorbed in the highest treasure. So, we should have very rich devotees of Krishna partaking in his nature should also have very rich minds, not rubbish minds. Although, samahatma sudurlabha, such a person is very rare to find. Oh, the next name's a big one. Only two syllables, but it's a big discussion. So maybe I'll leave that till tomorrow. Actually, it'd be very good to leave till tomorrow because it comes in the first verse of, or it's the subject of the first verse of Bhagavatam, Satya. So that's a big discussion. So I'll leave that till tomorrow. Any questions about Vasu and Vasumana? Vasu means? One of the eight Vasus, yeah. Also means the air that moves in the outer space.
Rekao si, Krishna je moj, taj osjećaj povoljno kultivirati.
It is good to cultivate the feeling that Krishna is mine. That's true. But one should not claim that Krishna is mine if one is still thinking that anything else is mine. This is my girlfriend. This is my dog. This is my cat. This is my bank balance. And Krishna is mine also. But Krishna is the supreme controller and he will not agree to become the property of anyone who thinks that he has anything else except Krishna.
Da li to znači da svako ima svoju Krishnu?
Does anyone have his or her own Krishna? Well, that sense it can be there. This is my Krishna. But in our Gaurīya Sampradaya, we cultivate the sense of being the servant of the servant. That we become the servant of Yashoda who has Krishna, of Radha who has Krishna. In the Vallabh Sampradaya, they say like that. My Thakurji, especially they say, their own deity. And they think my own Krishna. But in the Gaurīya Sampradaya, we more cultivate the sense of servant of the servant. But there is a direct sense also. More than my Krishna, it's our Krishna. But individual, personal relationship is there with Krishna also. Anything else?